The Ravens continue to do what they've done all season long, and that's win games. Welcome to the Ravens Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Samuel Njoku. Ravens take care of business against the Jaguars. I told you guys, they get the job done, a statement game, statement win against the AFC South leading Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk all about that. We will have the Ravens Talk mailbox where we ask fans their opinions on the game and they ask me questions, and hopefully I can answer to the best of my ability. We'll talk about the huge Christmas night matchup against the San Francisco 49ers, a game I've been looking forward to for, let's just be honest, a couple of months now. We'll have Kevin Ostreicher, who's the writer for Ravens Wire via USA Today. He'll join us and talk all about the Ravens' big win and that huge Christmas night matchup. But first, the Ravens do what they have to do. They get the job done. They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. Some people, I guess I'd say most people, expected the Ravens to win. But I didn't see a lot of people predict a 17-point win like I did. Now, the Ravens did win 16 and win 23-7, but 16, 17, what's the difference, right? The Ravens get the job done. They keep pace with the Miami Dolphins. They're 11-3 atop the AFC, number one seed, along with the San Francisco 49ers, who also had the number one seed in the NFC. We'll touch on that a little bit later, but let's focus on this game that just passed. Sunday Night Football, prime time. I tell you guys all the time, what separates the good quarterbacks from the great quarterbacks? The good teams from the great teams. Primetime games and playoff games. That's how you separate yourself. Get on national television where the whole world is watching just you and show out. And that's what the Ravens did. Headlined by that great defense, Mike McDonald again did his A1 job against that Jaguars offense. I mean, the Jaguars, let's be honest, the Jaguars gave the Ravens a little bit of some gifts, I will say. They gave them some gifts. The one thing that comes to mind is, of course, their play to end the second half. Well, the first half, the Jacksonville Jaguars were driving down the field, made a huge play, and Trevor Lawrence had a chance to spike the ball, stop the clock, give themselves some time to come up with another play, but they try to catch the defense off guard, throw a pass away from the end zone towards the sideline. I give them credit, but the Ravens made a great play, stopped them. They had no timeouts to stop the clock, and they go into half without 3 points or 7 points or whatever the case would have been had they spiked the ball. So that's what separates the Ravens from other teams. The Jaguars are a good team. Their window isn't closing. They're really in the thick of it. They're close, but you could tell they're not there yet because of rookie mistakes like that. I think the Jaguars still have a good chance of making the playoffs, but games like this will cost you in the postseason. Games like this will cost you against good teams like the Ravens, and the Ravens are definitely a good team. On offense, of course, Lamar Jackson, another stellar game. I believe right now he's number three in the MVP voting right now, but he's neck and neck with Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy, who we'll talk about later today, is the odds-on favorite as of now. But plays like that, the one, and you guys know what I'm talking about, the huge play where he sheds a defender and tosses a huge pass in the double coverage, Isaiah Likely makes a great catch, and it's just an example of what Lamar Jackson can do. The difference between having a guy like him, because there's no guy like Lamar, and not having him. Him being injured or whatever. So, big win for the Ravens. I thought that the Ravens played very well. Unfortunately, the one thing that I think about when I look back on this game is, of course, the injury to Keaton Mitchell. Keaton Mitchell has been confirmed to have suffered an ACL tear. He's out for the season. Huge loss for the Ravens. Huge loss. Now, the Ravens have Gus Edwards, and they have Justice Hill, but Keaton Mitchell was their home run hitter. There's a lot of things that the Ravens were able to do because he was on the field. Something that they couldn't do with Justice Hill. Of course, Justice Hill has had issues with retaining the football or giving away the football to Lamar Jackson during those option reads that has cost him some turnovers. So Keaton Mitchell not only is the guy who can break off an off tackle and make a big run to really put the defense on their heels, but he has that ability to make the defense think, react just a second longer than need be. And you know, in the NFL, every second counts, every inch counts. So big loss by Keaton Mitchell, unfortunate rookie running back fan favorite in Baltimore, and the Ravens are going to definitely miss him. Fortunately for the Ravens, they have depth at that position. Gus Edwards is still toting that rock, still playing great football. Now, he's more of a north-south runner between the tackles, but he's still a dangerous running back. Justice Hill, besides the turnover, is still maybe not as fast as Keaton Mitchell, but still does things very well. He's a great pass protector, in my opinion. Definitely a better pass protector than Keaton Mitchell, which was one of the negatives, in my opinion, of Keaton Mitchell's game in his first season. But for sure, Justice Hill has that ability to make plays outside the tackle. Just needs to get that turnover thing. I would very strongly advise the Ravens to stay away from doing that option play with Justice Hill on the football field. It's not worth it. Figure it out in the offseason. Leave the turnovers alone. Definitely, especially with these games coming up. I think every game from here on out, besides the Steelers game, is going to be tough. Each one of those games are going to be against opponents who are going to be in the postseason and are looking to make noise. So keep Justice Hill away from that type of play. Again, we mentioned Gus Edwards. The Ravens also announced that they're bringing in Melvin Gordon from the practice squad. Fans may not be very appreciative of that, but relax. Melvin Gordon may get a few touches here and there. I say Gus Edwards gets the bulk of the carries now that Keaton Mitchell's away. Hill may get a few touches himself, and Gordon, if need be, spelling those two guys, may get a carry or two. So definitely a huge loss by Keaton Mitchell. Not very excited about it. Very disappointed. It really was the bummer of the game. The Ravens played exceptionally well, and most fans will agree that loss was very sour. It left a sour taste in all of our mouths because we all know what Keaton Mitchell was able to do on the football field. But now, the Ravens are 11-3. Let's get back to the positives. 11-3, top in the AFC. The media has shifted. Oh, boy. I told you, primetime games and playoff games can do a lot for the perception. Now, I hear a couple of pundits out there who are still asking questions. Are the Bills the best team in the AFC, sneakily? Don't count out the Chiefs. You know, I hear stuff like that, but they're amateurs. I mean, in all likelihood. Or they're using statements like that to bulk their views, and it's not working. The Ravens are atop the AFC. Of course, they have another big game next week against the Miami Dolphins, and that will pretty much solidify themselves as the number one seed if and when they get that victory. But even without that matchup, I think it's easily said that the Ravens are the best team in the AFC. And we'll see if we can say NFL this coming up Monday against those San Francisco 49ers, and I'm very excited to talk about that. But before we do that, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have the Ravens Talk mailbox. Fans have a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions from these fans. Very excited. Pivotal matchup coming up. We'll talk all about it. We'll get a few questions in and maybe save some for Kevin Ostreicher next on the Ravens Talk podcast. Welcome back to the Ravens Talk podcast. Again, we mentioned we have the Ravens Talk mailbox. We have fans over on social media bring me questions to answer, and I'll answer a few to the best of my ability. Thanks, you guys, again. This is really fun segment for me personally because I get to get a pulse of what the fans are thinking about and trying to answer questions that maybe they don't get from other media sources. Let's see. Some of these we're going to talk about. A lot of these are about the 49ers, and I want to touch on them later. Let's see. Can the team steal first seed from the Ravens? This from Kent F.W. Garza. Thanks so much, Kent. Yeah, they could. The Dolphins are pretty much the only team right now that can do it. Maybe the Chiefs if the Ravens go on a losing skid, but I think that Week 17 matchup against the Dolphins will pretty much decide who gets that one seed. So the Dolphins can definitely steal it right now. I think the perception is that this 49ers game coming up doesn't really matter as much, and there's some truth to that a little bit, considering it's a non-conference game and this head-to-head matchup with the Dolphins is pretty much going to decide things. So, the Dolphins will definitely come in and blow the doors off and steal that one seat from the Ravens who have worked so hard to get it. So, yeah, for sure. Let's see. How much trust can we put on Melvin Gordon? How much does Gus need to step up? Gus doesn't need to step up. Gus just needs to do what he's been doing. You know, Keaton Mitchell and Gus are being much a change of pace back, but Gus has been successful when asked to run the football. So I don't think Gus needs to step up. I think Hill might need to step up. That might be a good point. Hill might need to step up a little bit. But as far as that, not so much. How much trust can we put in Melvin Gordon? As much as needs to be. I mean, I don't expect, and Ravens fans shouldn't expect Melvin Gordon to have the same type of role that Keaton Mitchell did. That's unrealistic at this point in the season. But I think he can come in and do a couple of things on special teams, maybe come in and have a couple of carries when those two guys are tired. So I think we should pump the brakes on expectations for Melvin Gordon. I think he's a capable back for sure, but I think the notion that he's going to come out spoiled the season for the Ravens is a bit premature. Now, let's see. Do you believe Zay Flowers is underachieved this year? Heck no. No, not at all. I think Zay Flowers has almost exceeded expectations. He's a small guy that came in. A lot of guys coming out the drafts, those analysts thought that he was more of a gadget guy. But the Ravens have used him to perfection. I think they got a little decoy crazy in this game. I think they really used Zay Flowers in motion and didn't really use him to the best of their ability. Some of that is what the Jaguars gave him, and we'll talk about it with Kevin about how I believe the Ravens definitely did what they had to do in the second half, especially taking what the defense gave him. But I think Zay Flowers has had a masterful year, and he's a huge part of this offense. I mean, right out the gate, first game of the season, you could tell right away that Todd Monken had plans for Zay Flowers, and he's met and exceeded those expectations. So definitely, I think touchdowns, I think that's what you guys are alluding to. I mean, those are great, but that's not the only measure of a good season. I think Zay Flowers has proven that he's one of the top young receivers in the game. Let's see, more 49ers stuff. I know you guys are excited. So am I. Should the Ravens consider bringing back Mark Ingram? No. No offense to Mark if you're watching this, but you're a great color analyst. Let's stick with that. The Ravens are fine at running back, guys. They're fine. Relax. They're fine. Predictions concerning final playoff seeding standings for the AFC. This is a good one. I think the Ravens are going to win the one seed. Let's just call it how we see it. I'll tell you how it happens later on in the next couple of weeks, but I think we can. It wouldn't be dumb to say the Ravens are going to win the number one seed. I think the Dolphins are going to stick by and get that two seed. I think the Chiefs could drop a little. They're not out the woods. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. The Chiefs are going to be playing on the road for the first time in a while in the postseason, if ever. I believe this might be their first time playing on the road in the postseason outside the Super Bowl. So it'd be a different environment for Patrick Mahomes to have to deal with in this postseason. But Chiefs should be right there. But I think things are the way they are now with the top four teams. Maybe the Jaguars might falter and the Colts or Texans might pick it up. But for the most part, I think what you see is what you get. The Bills might sneak in. But I think we pretty much know who the top teams are, and it's going to be Ravens, Dolphins, and Chiefs fighting for that Super Bowl appearance. One more question I saw that was pretty cool. Thoughts on the Ravens losing Keaton Mitchell and Mark Andrews? Keaton Mitchell's loss, we talked about already, but Mark Andrews is interesting because John Harbaugh mentioned it. There's a chance Mark Andrews could be back. And we saw what Isaiah Likely was able to do on the football field on Sunday Night Football. So having those guys, I think the Mark Andrews injury is definitely tough, but could be a blessing to get Isaiah Likely involved more trust, more cohesiveness with Lamar Jackson, and then bring back Mark Andrews, who we all know can ball out. Could be a very interesting postseason if Andrews is able to come back from that injury and produce for the Ravens in the 2024 postseason. Okay, do you think Lamar can survive the rest of the season and the playoffs without being hurt? I think he can. I think he better. The Ravens are deadly with Lamar Jackson. Now, the roster is constructed in the coaching staff has the schemes up where if Lamar Jackson, knock on wood, were to go down, they still have quarterbacks and Huntley and others who can come in and be decent. But the chances of winning the Super Bowl lives and dies in the arms and legs of number 8. So far, so good. Let's hope he stays healthy. We've seen franchises lose out on the season because of injury to their starting quarterback, but we've seen guys like Jake Browning step up for the Bengals, you know, so, and Joe Flacco coming in for the Browns, they're still alive. So it doesn't kill your season to have a quarterback go down, but it does kill your Super Bowl chances when a guy like Lamar Jackson is out for the season. So we pray that he stays healthy for the first time in a long time. It's looking pretty good. Well, hopefully the Ravens do what they have to do to help protect Lamar Jackson as he scrambles in that pocket. You know, those injuries are happening from inside the pocket. He's not scrambling and getting knocked out of the game. It's happening from within the pocket. So it's the Ravens' responsibility to scheme up and bring in talent to protect their quarterback. And perfect example of that is Andrew Luck with the Indianapolis Colts. He was getting pummeled because the Colts refused to get him help until it was too late. The Ravens have done a good job of that. I'm not saying the Ravens haven't done a good job of that. They've done pretty good. Of course, Ronnie Stanley has had a up and down season, but for the most part, the Ravens know exactly how to construct this offense, construct this roster to keep their guy upright. Those are some good questions. A lot of 49ers questions, which means you guys are excited as I am about it. We'll touch on it a little bit with Kevin Ostreicher next. He's going to come in, Ravens Wire, USA Today, a returning guest to talk all about this beautiful, beautiful matchup. I'm so excited. Christmas come early for me to come up on this camera and talk to you guys about it. And hopefully you guys are tuning in to hear my thoughts next on the Ravens Talk Podcast. Welcome back to the Ravens Talk Podcast. As you mentioned, we have with us Kevin Ostreicher, who's the writer for the Ravens Wire via USA Today. Welcome back to the podcast.
I'm glad to be back. It's a really exciting time. This Ravens team playoffs have been clinched, and I'd be shocked if they didn't win the AFC North. It'd be an all-time collapse if that didn't happen, but they're on their way to the one seed, and it's exciting.
For sure. We've had this podcast on for about 20 minutes, and I didn't even mention that. The Ravens did, in fact, clinch the postseason. The formality, of course, to some, but definitely to mention that they once again are reaching the postseason. And they did it off the heels of a huge Sunday night football victory against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I expected them to blow them out pretty much. I thought that the Jaguars were a little lagging behind and the Ravens were shooting up. And I thought that for sure this would be a game to showcase their talents. And it was kind of like that for the most part, but there were some huge moments in the game that might, I don't want to say haunt them, but come back as the season comes to an end. And one of those is the loss of Keaton Mitchell. Fans have been blowing my phone up. They're wondering what's going to happen with this team now that Keaton Mitchell is gone. A huge loss. I agree with them. It is a loss. What are your thoughts about that injury to Keaton Mitchell?
It's really tough because you can't really replace the speed. I mean, you have Lamar Jackson, you have Zay Flowers. Those guys are elusive, speedy, shifty. But Keaton Mitchell is just the gear. Like he reaches another gear and then another gear and then another one. So, I mean, what you're going to have to do if you're Baltimore is rely a lot more on Justice Hill, who I did think played decently well as the season went on. But Keaton Mitchell just came in, scorched earth, and kind of just grabbed that job from him. Right. So you lose a lot in that. I think teams are also starting to respect Keaton Mitchell. We saw on those, whether it's read option, RPOs, handoffs, play action, teams were sending manpower at Keaton Mitchell. They saw him as a threat, and not that they don't see Justice Hill or Gus Edwards, but we saw Lamar have multiple open running lanes, you know, taking it, bootlegging the ball out and running it right up the right side. He had that opportunity multiple times, and not saying he won't have it with Gus and Justice out there, but Keaton Mitchell averaged 8.1 yards per carry. I mean, he's somebody that averaged about 10 yards per reception as well, both good for second in the league with guys with more than 50 touches and more than 45 touches, at least that number. So I think Gus Edwards, to be honest, maybe has slowed down a little bit as the season has gone on in terms of yards per carry, maybe some of the vision here and there, and to be expected. But I think that they now had almost going back to what they had at the beginning of the season. And if we go back, we were talking about, well, they need something else at running back. They need, we talked, you know, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, all those trade guys. But then Keaton Mitchell made us all forget about that real quick without good he was playing. So hopefully those guys can step up again. I don't anticipate a huge move, but Melvin Gordon seems to be the guy and we will see what happens, but Mitchell's a big loss. I don't want to sugarcoat anything there.
Yeah. It definitely depressed a lot of Ravens fans. It was a bummer to me too, because I knew how much he worked to get into that position, and him being an undrafted free agent coming in and actually, you know, balling out. Even in training camp, we saw glimpses of what he could be, and it's just it's tough. It's tough to have him lose that chance to actually play in the postseason. But the Ravens played great. No one's standing that loss. Trevor Lawrence, he looked like he struggled a little bit. I mean, he did have that huge play to Agnew, but people were talking about how Trevor Lawrence may have, you know, taken a step back, regressed as a passer. But I think they may be taking away what this defense has done to opposing quarterbacks, and I think Trevor Lawrence was no different. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that defense, in your opinion, performed on Sunday night?
Yeah, I think that when you start with Lawrence, he looked off. And especially late in the game, his arm mechanics were really weird. And then we later found out that he is in the concussion protocol. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly when that happened. I know some people were pointing to maybe a Matabike hit earlier in the game. But regardless, he just looked off for most of it. And Jacksonville's offense, to me, just felt very sloppy. It felt like it was the sloppiest opponent the Ravens had kind of faced all season. And I'm not trying to discredit what Baltimore did because they took advantage of that sloppiness. But you have two early Brandon McManus missed kicks. Trevor Lawrence just, just dropped the ball. I don't even know how to explain what happened on that play. He just drops it. And then you have the sequence at the end of the half where Jacksonville's in position for at least 3 points if they spike the ball. They decide to try to get the Ravens off guard or catch them off guard. And Marcus Williams makes a tackle imbalance, they get nothing. So it just felt like for the entirety of the game, the Jaguars offense was kind of a step behind the Ravens defense. And I mean, I got to give credit to a couple of guys. I mean, first of all, Kyle Hamilton playing through that injury, the way that he performed, had multiple big time plays, big time pass breakups. We saw the play. You cannot leave Kyle Hamilton unblocked off the edge. You just can't do it. And teams are continuing to make that mistake, and he is showing time and time again why. Matabike gets his 11th straight game with at least half a sack, and he's on pace now to have the most sacks for a Raven in the past 12 years. Terrell Suggs back in 2014, or maybe even 2012, he had, I think, 13. Matabike's on that way with 12. And then you have other guys step up too. Brandon Stevens, I can't say enough about how good he's played for the entirety of the season. Marlon Humphrey had a bounce back game, in my opinion, here after a pretty rough one in week 14 against the Rams. So it's, again, these next man up mentality, guys stepping up. Marcus Williams goes out. Geno Stone comes in and I thought played decently well overall. So again, you hold the Jacksonville offense to 7 points. They don't have Christian Kirk, but still, you got to shut down Travis Etienne, Calvin Ridley, and Zay Jones. We saw Zay Jones make a spectacular catch. I'd like Zay Jones to stop doing that against the Ravens. It was the second straight year we've seen that happen, one with more implications than the other. But I thought Baltimore's defense played really well, and I think headlining it, the Jaguars went 3-13 on third down and 0-3 in the red zone, and the Ravens have been on top of that all season. It was a really good performance.
Yeah, and you mentioned Kyle Hamilton, how he's pretty much been an unstoppable force, and teams have definitely, for whatever reason, have not found a way to stop him, especially off the edge. I think teams need to start considering him to be a linebacker when he gets there, and if he's to pull back and become a covered DB, then more power to him. But, man, he has been explosive off the line. Let's talk about another line guy. You mentioned him a little bit, Matabike. He is going to get paid. Now, as the season progressed, I was on the line of there's no way that the Ravens are going to be able to afford this guy. But now we are reaching territory of there's no way they can let him go. No matter what the cap situation is, whether it be franchise tag or signing him outright and just screw all cap logic whatsoever, they got to keep that guy. What are your thoughts on how he's performed and your thoughts about what's going to happen in the offseason with him?
Yeah, it's so hard for them, or for me, to imagine them letting him walk. I mean, obviously stuff can happen and money and all that, but I know I put it out on social media. I know you responded to it and you said, if it's a franchise tag, you better suck it up and play.
Exactly.
Because the Ravens need him, and they need him in a bad way. It's so hard in today's game, and it has been, to find really good, consistent interior pressure. And the Ravens have been looking for it, you can argue, since Elodie Nada left. There have been spurts of it here and there, but this consistency, we haven't really seen it. And to Matabike's credit, we had seen the flashes. First year, second year, third year, he had shown that he had this in him. But this was the full breakout. I mean, what a time for him to do it in the contract year. And I know we saw some reports a couple weeks ago. I think it was Adam Schefter saying that the Ravens tried to get him under contract in the summer, but he bet on himself. And look how much that's going to pay off for him. I think we have passed the teens territory in contract per year for him. He's definitely in that $20, $25 million per season range.
Yeah.
I don't know what the exact franchise tag number would be for him, but at this point, if you're Baltimore, you can't afford to let a guy like that walk. And the tough part about it to me is this is going to be such a brutal offseason for them in a couple different ways. It seems like everybody's looking for a new deal now. It's not just Matabike. It's Patrick Queen. It's Geno Stone. They have to figure out the Odell situation. Kevin Zeitler, Gus Edwards. And obviously, they can make some money, right? What are they going to do with Ronnie Stanley? How are they going to maneuver that contract? They can restructure and free up some cap space. But they're going to have a lot of guys. I mean, what are they going to do with Jadeveon Clowney, Kyle Van Noy, Michael Pierce? The list goes on and on and on here. But Matabike, to me, has to be top of the list get that guy on a contract because he's still young. And again, the term that's starting to come out now is baby Aaron Donald. You don't want to let baby Aaron Donald walk. You want to have him continue to grow and flourish in your defense. And hopefully Mike McDonald is assuming he's not hired away by somebody else.
100% correct. Yeah, he's not going anywhere. There's no chance. No way EDC is going to let that guy walk. They'll figure out something. Maybe they restructure some contracts to make it happen. But he's not going anywhere. He's been that dominant. And unfortunately, that means guys like Patrick Queen and Geno Stone are going to have to find money elsewhere. Well, we're done talking about the Jaguars. We got to get to the 49ers. I've been looking forward to this matchup for 2 months. I've been talking about it to anybody who will listen to it. Two heavyweights going at it. It's not just the talent that has me excited, but the schematics, the way these coaches dial up things for their players to show out on game day has me really excited. What are your initial thoughts about? I know it's early in the week for those who are wondering how we record this. It's early in the week, but let's just get a taste of what you think is going to maybe not happen, but how do you think things shake out from an offensive defense standpoint?
Yeah, I think for Baltimore's offense, a lot, well, not a lot, but I think some will be determined on who plays for San Francisco. We're hearing maybe Arik Armstead and Javon Hargrave could be back for this game. And that defensive line, when those two get back, it's scary. You know, you got Nick Bosa and Chase Young, who they got from the Commanders, and then those two. Now, Baltimore's interior has been pretty rock solid for most of the season here. I think, you know, Tyler Linderbaum's playing at an all-pro level. Kevin Zeitler has been great. John Simpson's been a lot better than I thought he was going to be. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the tackle situation with Ronnie Stanley and Morgan Moses. Both those guys clearly probably playing a bit hurt right now. If you look at the tape, look at the film, and obviously the injury reports. And it's been the rotation with Patrick McCary coming in for Stanley and Daniel Faalele coming in for Morgan Moses. And I think at this point, that's what you have to do. Ronnie Stanley just can't anchor right now. It's clear that he's lost some of that strength. I think the knee's bothering him. Who knows what the ankle's doing with him right now. But it's a big test for Baltimore because I think you can exploit some with the 49ers defensive backs. They lost an all-pro safety a couple months ago, and their corners, I think if you had to pick a weak point on that defense, Javarius Ward has been playing great for them, but I do think you can exploit the secondary a little bit. But we know about Fred Warner. We know about that linebacking group over there. And it's a linebacker battle, right? Fred Warner, and then you got Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen, and the duos. So it's exciting. And then for the Ravens defense going up against the San Francisco offense, a lot of quick hitters, a lot of screens. You got to account for Debo Samuel. You talk about account for Kyle Hamilton on the offensive side of the ball. For the Ravens, you got to account for Debo Samuel. Brandon Ayuk has been on a steady, you know, his role has increased there every single season. He's been playing great for him. Mm-hmm. And then the Christian McCaffrey effect, obviously, you have to be able to stop him both as a runner and as a receiver. And Brock Purdy's playing great football right now. I mean, we can argue that the MVP conversation is going to come down to Christmas. It's going to be Lamar versus Brock. And I think much like maybe we saw in basketball with the head-to-head between Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid last year, mm-hmm. Embiid got the better of Jokic in Philly, then Embiid didn't play in Denver. It does carry some weight with both those guys. Now, I know we can talk about the passing yards, the passing touchdowns and the conversation. I do think the MVP should go a lot further than that personally, which is why I'm a bit higher on Lamar for the award. But it just has so many narratives. And not to mention, this could be a potential Super Bowl preview, because I think after Philly's loss to Seattle, seems like the NFC will run through San Francisco. And there's not a team in the AFC that inspires me more right now than Baltimore.
Yeah, and you definitely touched on all the points that I agree with. One, the MVP battle, I think, will come down to this game coming up, which is one of the reasons why I'm so excited. Brock Purdy against Lamar Jackson, and Purdy has decent stats, pretty good stats. Lamar Jackson, not so much, but the eye test for Lamar, I think, speaks volumes. I think pretty much the whole entire offense is flowing through what Lamar's being able to do on the ground as well as in the air. I think if Brock Purdy has a good game and somehow beats the Ravens, then I think the reward goes to Brock. But if Lamar has the game that he has, even against Jacksonville, not even against the Rams, but just, you know, just making crazy plays of his legs and the Ravens come out on top, I think that'll catapult him to that victory for sure. Let's get your final thoughts, because I know you got to go. The Ravens against the 49ers, we touched on it. Both teams have great, great players and coaches to boot. Let's get a score. I'm not going to post this before you get a chance to say anything. I think we'll get this out late Wednesday, early Thursday, but I just want to get your opinion. Who do you think is going to get? Just off the top. I know you haven't got a lot of time to look at it, but I just want to get your thoughts on who you think is going to win this one.
Hey, you know, for me, I feel like the narratives about this game, it's, oh, well, the 49ers are just going to wax the Ravens, and that's that. I feel like a lot of, even some Ravens fans are just like, just get out of the game healthy. Don't play Lamar. Just they're going to beat us regardless. And I don't really feel that. I feel like this is going to be a competitive game. I mean, this is the best in the NFC versus the best in the AFC, in my opinion. San Francisco is a wagon. They're a really good team. Their offense is incredible. The defense is too. But you can say the same thing about Baltimore, where before this game, the Ravens had scored, I believe, in five of their last six or six of their last seven, 30-plus points. Obviously, this past week, it was only 23. But the Ravens' defense has been playing lights out. And again, it's best on best. And you have that defensive – I mean, you talk about Roquan Smith says every single week. I mean, he has that mentality of he is the hunter, not the hunted. He's going to go out there and that defense, have his team ready. So, I mean, I think this will be like a Christmas classic. And I know the Ravens have been on the wrong side of that. I'm going to pick them to be on the right side of that this time. Might be bold to some people. But again, if you want to win the Super Bowl, you're probably going to have to go through San Francisco. So this will be a good test early on to see, all right, where is this Ravens team right now when you have the best of the best? And that's what you want. You want to go through the best to win. And that's what they're going to have to do here. So I'm going to say 28 to 26 Ravens. I'll pick them to win.
That's a good one. I like that. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Again, let the folks at home know where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Always a blast talking with you. Oh, yeah. And you can find me over on social media, Twitter, I guess X now at this point, at Chaos Striker 34. You can also find me hosting the Locked On Ravens podcast 5 days a week. You can find that anywhere you get your podcasts, on audio form, also in video form on YouTube. Also writing over for the Ravens Wire. So any written content you can find over there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll be on your podcast or your media outlet later today. So definitely have a chance to join your stuff, but definitely appreciate you having us. Appreciate you joining us and getting your insight on what's going to be a great Christmas night matchup.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. That's Kevin Ostreicher with Ravens Wire and Locked On Ravens. When we return, we'll get my final thoughts on that Ravens 49ers game. Very excited about it. And we'll touch on what's going to happen next on the Ravens Talk podcast. Welcome back to the Ravens Talk podcast. Again, that was Kevin Ostreicher with Ravens Wire and Locked On Ravens. Always a pleasure to have him on and get his insight. He's always tapped in daily content on the Ravens stuff. So definitely wanted to have someone like him on to talk all about the Ravens and their big win against the Jaguars, as well as their upcoming juggernaut of a matchup against the San Francisco 49ers. All right, so we got Kevin's thoughts. Let's get my thoughts. One, again, I told you guys last week I wasn't going to look at film. Barely minimal tape again until the Ravens finished off against the Jaguars. Of course, I've seen the San Francisco 49ers play. I've seen the 49ers play on primetime and what have you, but I haven't really got a chance to delve in to find out what exactly that team is all about. I got a chance to do it on Monday morning. I've been doing it for the last 14 hours consecutively. I've watched both 49ers tape and Ravens tape because I wanted to see how Ravens matched up against teams with similar interior fronts. So the Browns and the Steelers come to mind. Two games in which they've lost, mind you. The 49ers are head and shoulders better than them with talent as far as the defensive front concerned. But it gave me an idea of pretty much how the Ravens would attack the 49ers. The Jaguars also have a good defensive front. Obviously not to the standard of the 49ers, but definitely a team that can bring pressure to the quarterback. So after looking at all of that, seeing what the 49ers can do, I got to say the 49ers are magical on offense and defense, mostly on offense, if I'm being completely honest. Love what Kyle Shanahan has done with that team. Brock Purdy, it's an axe to do a lot. I know Cam Newton gave a spiel about how he's a game manager and he received some flack, mostly about Dak Prescott, but he did mention Purdy as well. So, but Purdy has been asked to do very little, give the ball to the open receiver and let their talent shine. And that's good enough. I mean, but this team, why are you asking him to do anything but that? So the offense has been able to attack opposing defenses primarily because of McCaffrey, Debo, and Ayuk, but don't count on Purdy. Purdy can make quick decisions. He knows where to go with the football. I'm not 100% sure. Now, defensive have been trying their best to give him exotic looks to confuse him. They don't really trust him as a passer of the football, and it shows on film. But doing that, being exotic like that, especially in the back end, frees up Christian McCaffrey to pretty much go off on any given down, which is why teams seldom do that late in the game. They kind of calm down and for the most part, in most instances, dumb down their defense to make sure they're accounting for Christian McCaffrey. I say all that to say the Ravens bring a huge challenge to those San Francisco 49ers. Just going to put it out there. The Philadelphia Eagles in the first quarter had their way with the 49ers. That's one game that stuck out with me. I look at the past three or four games, and the first quarter of the Eagles game really showed me something. Now, the Eagles don't have nearly as good of a defense as the Ravens do. So there are some things from that game that I believe the Ravens will take into account and put up on the game once the game starts on Christmas night. There's a lot of things that the 49ers defense can do to confuse the offensive front of the Ravens. Not really so much the back end, but I think there's some things that the 49ers can do defensively on that line, especially if those guys that Kevin mentioned comes back and plays for that game, that can really confuse the offensive line. So it's going to be very important for the Ravens offensive line to be a cohesive unit that day. I say all this to say, I'm agreeing with Kevin. I think the Ravens have a chance, a good chance even, to pull out this win. Now, how did they do that? The Ravens can't play like they did against the Rams. The Ravens can't play like they did against the Chargers. The Ravens can't even play like they did against the Jaguars in the first half. So how do I believe you stop this nearly impossible football team in the San Francisco 49ers? Do what you do best. Run the football early and often. The Ravens can really put a number on the defensive front. It doesn't even have to be bull rush plays up the middle. Delays, counters, read options, RPOs, stuff that the Ravens do very well. If they don't get away from that, because in that Jaguars game, the first half, the Ravens really tried to pass the football, much to the same way they did against the Chargers. And it wasn't until late into the first half, early second half, that the Ravens decided, okay, let's run the football. Let's make the Jaguars sell their soul to stop the run and then use our weapons on the outside to do damage. And that's what the Ravens are going to have to do. If you want to pass the ball, fine. I'm all about it. Tomlin, you want to show off your toys? You want to prove to the world that you're not Greg Roman? Fine. But establish the run first. Let the pass morph from the success of your running attack. Nobody in the league, including the 49ers, can stop the Ravens' run game unless they decide to sell their soul to do it. Period. So as long as the Ravens start early to push the rush attack down the 49ers' throat, it does two things. One, it sets up for the play action, which is huge. If the Ravens run the play action effectively, meaning they have the run game do damage and then pass the ball, there's no team in the league with a better pass action, play action attack than the Baltimore Ravens. And it does two things. It keeps Brock Purdy and that offense off the field. And that offense is dangerous. As well as the defense that the Ravens have played, if you give the Ravens defense too many snaps, eventually they're going to get tired. Eventually they're going to wear down. And that's how the 49ers were able to beat the Eagles. Maybe not to that extent, because I think the Eagles gave up six straight possessions with a touchdown. I don't expect that with the Ravens. But what I'm saying is, if the Ravens offense is unable to keep Brock Purdy off the field and he gets extended periods of time to get comfortable with that defensive scheme that Mike McDonald builds up, it could be a long day. So my request to the Ravens coaches, because I think that they hear me. When I was on social media, I posted, the Ravens need to start running the football. Literally the next drive and almost for the rest of the game, they ran the football. So if you're listening, if you're watching, start with the run. Look at the film. I know you see it. The 49ers can be had when running the football. Even with those guys coming in, there's just too much that you have to do as a team on defense to key in on the running game without sacrificing the ability for the opposing team, being the Ravens, to pass the football on you. So the Ravens run the football effectively. When the 49ers cheat, finally, and attack your offensive line, who is beat up or who is unable to sustain huge talent coming at you from all sides, Chase Young and Nick Bosa, that's when you kill them with the pass. That's the formula. So if the Ravens follow that formula, I expect the Ravens to win. Again, some fans have pointed this out. It's not a huge deal if the Ravens lose this game. I believe next week's matchup against the Dolphins will pretty much decide who wins the one seed. But this is the NFL. Win your games. Not only that, but this is likely the Super Bowl matchup between the Ravens and 49ers. So get your intel in. Get all you need to get from this game, win or lose, and bring it with you in Las Vegas come February. Because I said it on August. I said it right here. Ravens 49ers, Super Bowl, with the Ravens coming out on top. I think they do it again. I think they do it first, I should say, in San Francisco on Christmas night. All right, that's going to do it for us here at the Ravens Talk Podcast. Again, I've been very excited for this game. So I think win or lose, I'll be very excited when this game comes to a close and we get to talk about it. I didn't even get a prediction. I predict the Ravens to win, let's say 27-21. I think a 6-point win. We'll see. But yeah, it's been a great week. The Ravens win in Jacksonville. They have to go on the road again to the West Coast on Christmas night and get the job done against those San Francisco 49ers. Huge test. Again, if you guys are following me on social media, thank you. Continue to do so. If not, follow me on YouTube. Subscribe there. Follow me on Twitter on Ravens Talk Pod and Ravens Talk Podcast on Instagram. Again, thank you again for joining us. We'll see you next week. Hopefully the Ravens are 12-3 and a win away from clinching up home field advantage throughout the playoffs. We'll see you next week.